Dang it. What was I saying? The human dongle.
Oh, get your finger out of my eye.
Way better now that you've stopped touching it.
Yes, I was...
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, Aaron.
How's it going?
Living the dream.
Yeah. Your dream is a dream that I'd like to get a part of sometime. Like, your dream seems pretty awesome.
Sounds a little creepy.
Maybe it is.
We better check with our spouses first. Okay, so yeah. Be a safe professional dream.
Travis, no, seriously. You have a pretty fun outlook and life, from what I can tell. And I think a lot of it is because you like to gamify. You like to make games out of things.
Yeah, it's fun to play games. We enjoy games at the Hazelwood household, and any chance I get to play a game, I take full advantage. And it doesn't matter if it's cardboard or video.
Yeah, well, and I like that about you. What is your favorite cardboard game to play at home? What's your go-to game?
Well, here recently, the go-to game has been Mansions of Madness, which is a game that requires a free app for your device, and they have they're in all the app stores, and basically it's this kind of fantastical game where I don't know. It's hard to describe. I guess it's sort of like Dungeons and Dragons, but it isn't. But it's managed in that way. So, like, on the app, you pick your character, and on the app, you identify these characters are in play.
Okay.
And you pick your scenario on the app, and then it tells you, okay, hey, deal these starting cards. Okay.
Okay.
And then you interact with the app a little bit more, and it says, okay, here's your starting scenario. Place this particular tile on the table. And so you place a tile on the table, it tells you to place a couple of tokens on there, and then you play a game. And then when you interact with something that has been placed, you interact with the app, and the app tells you this and such happened, or place this new token, or explore this new place. And so as you move through, the game board grows. It's really neat. It's really neat.
Is this a game that can be over in 30 minutes or 2 hours?
No, this is like 2 hours plus.
2 hours. So you're in it for the night. Yeah. Or is it something that you can like play for 30 minutes, come back tomorrow with all the game in the same place, pick up? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
so, good to know. So you could play for, say you play for 45 minutes and you're like, whoo boy, we got to move. Then you can take a picture of your game setup.
Okay.
Okay. And once you do that and you exit the app, it saves the game that you were last playing. So if you want to come back to it in an hour or the next day or whatever, it just takes you a couple minutes to put all the pieces back where they were, and then you can pick the game back up.
That's kind of cool, too.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat game. Other ones that we've played a lot at the Hazelwood House, there's a game called Settlers of Catan, which I think a lot of people have played.
Okay.
There is a game called Ticket to Ride Europe, Ticket to Ride series, and we have the Europe version, and that is a lot of fun. There's a game called Small World, which is really fun. There's one that, and we don't play it very often because we really enjoy playing.
Okay.
But we don't play it very often because it is a complicated game, and people get fidgety while waiting for their turn, and then we're like, hey, get back in here, it's your turn. If it's not your turn, there's not a lot to do. And it's called The Dead of Winter. So anyway, I don't know. It just depends on.
I have literally only heard of one of those games. I need more gamification in my life.
We play a lot of Skip Bo too. Oh, your microphone just bleeped out. And excellent eye roll.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now, Verizon.
Okay, so the game we play the most here at the house, and I just found it's not fun for everybody. Like, it's fun for me is Yahtzee. Like, I love Yahtzee, and boy, when I get a Yahtzee, watch out, because I'm screaming. And when my family gets a Yahtzee, I'm like, Yahtzee! I you know, it is so exciting. But I just recently found out that nobody likes playing it.
Except you.
You have to do math.
Yeah,
according
math
to Tatum.
Involved. Right.
And so Tatum hates it. Travis told me the game goes like this. Erin rolls, figures out what she's going to do, passes the dice to Jolene. Jolene rolls. Erin figures out what Jolene's going to do, passes the dice to Tatum. Tatum rolls. Erin figures out what Tatum's going to do. And so I'm just trying to make sure everybody gets the highest score possible, right?
Yeah. I mean, you're just trying to help.
But it's not coming across that way. And I thoroughly enjoy winning a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And my game card resides on the refrigerator. And so that was another thing. They're like, we don't want to play games with you.
You know, there's games out there where you have to cooperate together. So like my son, when we play a competitive game, he wants to win it. He gets grumpy if he doesn't. He does everything he can to win the game.
Sure.
So we've made sure to include in our stash games that are cooperative so that you have to work together to win. Mansions of Madness is one. There's another one called Pandemic, which you have to work together on to play, and that's a pretty fun one. And so we try to include some of those things. Now, if we're playing Skip Bo or Uno and it's kind of the luck of the cards or whatever, it's not quite as gloves offy, but like Settlers of Catan, like Rome wants to win. Oh, there's another one that's really fun too called Seven Wonders.
Okay,
it's a card game, and he just like with that particular game, our family is legit out for blood, all of us.
Okay,
yeah, and
good to know.
I don't know what it is about it. So. I don't know. There's just some fun games out there that aren't super complicated that are pretty fun. There's an easy one to play, just a two-player game called Patchwork. And it's just a little quilt with little buttons that you can win as you move around the game board. Who knew how much fun that would be? But it's so much fun because you're trying to take these little pieces of patchwork stuff and put them together so that they fill in this quilt. I don't know.
All right. Well, I've written down a few because
Sushi Go Party. Tatum would like
something other than Yahtzee needs to happen here.
Tatum might like Sushi Go Party. That's a little card game and it's fun.
Sushi Party. Okay.
Sushi Go Party.
So, I've asked before people's backstory in education. I'm going to ask you your backstory in gamification. Is that acceptable?
Yeah, that's
you give me that.
So what happened was. Several years ago, I went to the ISTE conference in San Antonio. It was like, I don't know, 2010, 11, 12, somewhere around in there. And my friend Christina and I had just flipped our classes. And we'd gone to ISTE to get more ideas on the flipped class thing. And Jane McGonigal was one of the keynotes at ISTE. And she started talking about, you know, gamifying what games do to the brain. And how to gamify different things in life. Now, she wasn't necessarily addressing education specifically. But sure. I was like, oh my gosh, I love this lady. Well, the other keynote speakers were also tied back into gamification of some sort. And so, although we went to that conference primarily looking for flipped classroom ideas and improvements, I left with a lot of gamification ideas. And actually, that conference actually led me to pursue my graduate degree. Like that's the genesis of becoming Dr. Hazelwood.
All right, that's good to know. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so it took I think Christina and I were able to go back to ISTE the next year, and so for over a year I stewed on gamification. How can I use this in my classroom? How can I make it work right? How can I manage it? Like I was just really, I had to really think a lot on it. I was reading blogs, I was reading websites, I was trying to figure out how to make it work for me. We went back to ISTE the next year, and I was in a session and the way the guy taught the session and talked about what he did in his class, like, helped the gears fall in place for me. And by the time we got home from that conference, I had a rough outline of how I was going to gamify my calculus class.
And you've used tools to try to help you. I mean, you're like on your own gamifying now. You've used like ClassCraft and things like that before. Give me the pros of package gamification platforms versus what you're doing.
So some of the pros to that are it can help you manage some of the smaller details, where as teachers we get overwhelmed with, like, I got to keep up with grades, I got to keep up with discipline, I got to keep up with homework, I've got to keep up with this and this and those five things, and I just really can't take the time to put together a spreadsheet and have this complicated thing go on and run through and measure all the stuff and come back and who bought what and how did it work and who has this perk. I mean, so it can really snow you under. So ClassCraft is one of the platforms that are available for teachers to use to help with gamifying things. And they work in a similar fashion to Dojo. So for the elementary school teachers that listen, they're familiar with what ClassDojo is. So ClassCraft is similar to that. It's different, but it's similar. And ClassCraft also works really great if all of the students have a device that they can be on while you're working. Because you can reward students for, when you have your class, you can reward students for doing something they're supposed to be doing, which is one of the perks of one of the things of gamification is you get a reward for doing what you're supposed to be doing. And so when you make that reward, everybody in your class can see that reward has been delivered to a particular student, like asked a great question. Here's the reward, boom. And they get more experience points and everybody sees that. Or you have the kid that's being a ding dong. And so you ding them and everybody sees that. And so ClassCraft makes it easy to manage some of those aspects. And they also really have some fun things kicked in. Like when I was using it, I have used it for a couple of years, but when I was using it, there was a thing called the daily scroll. So you broke the scroll and it gave you this thing that you're supposed to follow all day, like talk like a pirate. Or when you get into ClassCraft, you have to choose a type of character. So maybe wizards get free bathroom breaks, or I don't know, it's just different things like that every day that were unique. And so that was one cool thing about ClassCraft. But the drawback to ClassCraft is if everybody doesn't have a device in front of them to watch what's going on, then it's difficult to really hook them all together. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Is that, I mean, I know that have like AirPlay in their class. One thing that you could have all times and update it available.
Hey, you're really fuzzy all of a sudden. Ask that question again.
Yeah, you were too, and I'm trying. I mean, it looks like I've got good signal, but I don't know what's going on.
That's okay. So ask that question again.
Okay. So a lot of teachers have AirPlay in their classrooms. Is it something that you could have on one computer and then have it AirPlay to the whole class, and so everybody can see it at all times there? Or is it really device specific, like each kid needs their own way to view it?
You could do that, but one of the things that ClassCraft allows is it allows the students to have some specific actions that they can take as well as part of the learning process.
Okay.
And so if a student needs rescued, or if they need to work together, or, you know, sort of a different combination of events, it helps if a student has their own device to look at.
Okay.
I liked ClassCraft. I thought it was really fun.
So. But you found your own way to bust out of that. I mean, for somebody who's looking to start, you know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. For me, because I used it 1 year and I was like, oh, this is a great start. And then you had given other ideas and reasons why you broke out of that mold. It's just a place to start. And I know that they offer free platforms. Mm-hmm. There's pro platforms and pre platforms, you know.
Right.
So that was just a way, like, if you are into this, you want to get into this, it might be a place to start.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. Another one, too, is Resly.
Oh, tell me about that one.
So Resly is the same but different. In that it's the same in that it helps manage gamification in your classroom. It's different in that you can actually put your curriculum into Resly,
Okay.
And as students do things, they move through Resly. It becomes like it becomes almost like a learning management system. So I can put together a unit in Resly, and I can set it up so that before my students move on to the next section or chapter or whatever of a unit, they have to earn X number of points or successfully complete a quiz or whatever. And I can give rewards, badges, and achievements all through Resly. I can link in YouTube videos. I can link in text. It's a bit more robust in that you can put your curriculum in there. And so I like it for that reason. And it automatically counts up the points that you're doing. It tracks the experience points for your students. So experience points would be like student turns in homework, they get plus 10 experience points. So it's sort of like a grade in that regard. But okay. Resly's really neat. And I think they're a freemium sort of situation too.
Okay. Spell that for the listeners.
Let me just double check. Rezzly, I think. Yeah, Rezzly, Resly.com. It used to be 3D Game Labs, and it got its start in Boise at Boise State.
Okay.
So it's really cool.
Who application here is Dane McGonigal?
So, okay, say that one more time.
Or gamification heroes?
Mm-hmm.
Aside from Dane McGonigal.
Gamification heroes besides Jane McGonigal. Gosh, I would almost have to say in this regard, just some of the different researchy articles I've been able to do. I can't say that I've landed on one specific person. Outside of Jane, like I can point to her as the catalyst, but there are people that I've read. So some people that have helped me process through all this, because it's like a big overarching thing. So it's not something you could just go and start tomorrow for you. Like you really have to be intentional and think about this, because just like in a game, there's a lot of interlocking pieces.
Yeah.
So are there things you can do tomorrow in your classroom to gamify? Yeah. But to make it the best experience possible, you really want to try and put together a whole variety of things. So I really like Jane McGonigal. I read a book by Michael Matera called Explore Like a Pirate. So it comes out of the Dave Burgess Teach Like a Pirate printing, consulting, whatever that whole thing is. And it was really interesting because he was sharing, these are some specific things that you can do. And a great idea that he had, because one of the things I struggled with was when you play a video game and you do X, Y, and Z, you earn money or you get a badge or you do a thing. And then you can almost always buy an upgrade somewhere. You can improve okay. your armor, or you can improve your weapon, or you can improve your car, or there's some sort of improvement you can make a purchase. And so I was trying to figure out what's the best way to do that. And an idea that Michael Matera shared in his book, Explore Like a Pirate, was you go get those baseball card sleeves that can hold like 9 baseball cards.
Okay.
And you create your upgrade to whatever. And the kids, we want to teach our kids to be responsible, right? And so giving them a 0 for homework they don't turn in doesn't necessarily teach responsibility, because we're supposed to grade the actual homework and document the learning. So responsibility and homework should be separate grades. Well, here's the responsibility part. Your kids have earned a perk or an upgrade or a badge or a thing. And so we give it to them. And he would take the baseball card, plastic baseball card sheets, and make his badges fit into those little baseball card holders. So as kids got things, that's where they stuck them.
And then do they just keep that in their desk or yeah. in the classroom? Is it on display? That's a pretty cool idea.
They kept it in their binder for his class. It was part of, you got to have XYZ for class. And so they had to have a 3-ring binder. He would give them the baseball card sheet. They would put all the badges or perks or whatever in there. And as they used something, they would take it out and give it to him.
That's pretty wicked awesome.
Yeah,
I like that.
It's a great idea.
It's like a Pokemon
yeah.
in the classroom.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's cool.
And the other thing, the other person that I really have enjoyed reading, which has also helped, is a guy named UK Cho. It's YU-KAI and then CHOU. And he wrote a book called Actionable Gamification. And his whole thing is, if you try and set up gamification where it's just badges, just leaderboards, and just experience points, you're missing the boat. Yes, those are important when you're playing a game, but there's more than that. There's this thing that he calls octalysis. And so I'm just like looking off the cover of his book here. There's these eight what he calls core drives for games. There has to be meaning. There needs to be empowerment. There's some sort of social influence. There's unpredictability. There's avoidance, scarcity, ownership, and accomplishment. And so if you can set your game up to include different pieces of all of these core drives, it provides a richer experience for your students. So, for example, not every student is competitive. My middle child is not necessarily a competitive person. She likes to play games, but she likes to play games because she's hanging out with people she loves. She doesn't necessarily play games to come in and win it all. So if she goes into a class where it's set up to have a winner, she's not going to be as successful as my son. And so what this octalysis framework does is it helps provide ideas to have a more well-rounded game so that it speaks to different personalities of all your different students. So even if I don't want to go in and dominate everything, maybe I want the most scarcest, you know, perk available, and I work hard to get that.
Okay.
Or maybe I really do want a sense of accomplishment, and I'm going to try these 10 things, because if I can do these 10 things, something happens. Or maybe I'm there because my friends are, but if my friends are all learning together, I'm learning with them, so maybe I'm more social. So kind of combining these three books together has been interesting. And then one more book that I'm reading is called The Multiplayer Classroom by a guy named Lee Sheldon. And he's basically talking about how to design your course more like a game. And a lot of it comes down to how you grade and the terminology you use for him.
Wow. So these are just little steps teachers can take to move towards that information.
Right. Like if you wanted to gamify your class tomorrow, I would say do a couple things. One, change how you grade. So typically, you know, forever, I graded, you started off with 100 points and you went down from there. You know, you went to a 95, you went to an 80, you went to whatever, all the way down to 0 points. So in games always count points up. You're hardly ever deducted points in games. I mean, sometimes you are, but in most games that you play, points are added in. So instead of giving a 100-point assignment, you still give that 100-point assignment, but now as you're going through and grading it, they earn 5 points for each correct question instead of losing 5 points for each miss. That's one change. Another change with your grading would be what you call your homework. So don't call it a homework anymore. Call it a quest. Don't call, we're not doing the chapter 3 unit of XYZ anymore. Our mission is to accomplish this unit. You know, so now the mission is Earth, or the mission is, you know, it's like in science class, if you have I don't know, you're talking about volcanoes, and so you have a whole unit on volcanoes. So it's not like chapter 3, volcanoes, molten lava, blah blah blah. No, it's our mission is to become volcanologists.
Okay.
So by the end of this mission, we're going to understand, you know, we're going to go through all the learning that needs to happen for us to be able to be volcano experts.
Can you earn XP for skill sets that you need to learn?
Sure. So if there's things that they need to know about a volcano and it requires these vocabulary words, then that's a skill set a student has to have in order to demonstrate mastery of that topic, right? So, boom, as they knock out vocabulary, they get experience points for that.
All right.
So those are just two things.
I mean, super exciting.
And then one other small thing that you can do right off the bat that you don't have to manage with a lot of fancy software or incredible spreadsheets is come up with different little perks that you know your students want. So I worked with high school kids. They want every break they can get on a test, right? So I try to think of perks that my high school kids would want to use on a test. Like work together on a test, ask me a question about their test, talk to another student about the test. Like, those are some of the perks that I offered. And you didn't just get them. Like, you had to do certain things to earn them. So maybe in your class, so that you don't have to keep track of stuff, after a student turns in X number of homeworks, they get a perk.
So one of my favorite games in life was that, like, Galaxia game. You know, I think it's like Galaga in some rings and Galaxia on others. I really liked earning that extra airplane, that new life.
Yeah.
How could you get a new life?
Yeah, so that's something that you could do. Like, maybe one of the ways that you could offer the opportunity for a new life is once you complete your volcano mission and you've beat the boss at the end of it, because there's always a boss at the end of a level, then you get from me, you get the redo, you know, the volcano parachute, or I don't know, something like that. And then
that's pretty cool.
Now a student has an opportunity to redo something somewhere along the way. I know a lot of teachers too, on the first day of school, hand out like the quiz parachute and the homework parachute. So when you forget your homework, you give the homework parachute, or when you totally bomb a quiz, you give the quiz one. So don't hand those out right away. Have the students do something that earns that. But
I like the way you think, Hazelwood.
You know, just make it something that you're comfortable with, though. Because if you say, all right, you can have, like, depending on your age group, maybe no shoes in the classroom, or you get to wear your headphones today when I'm not speaking, or you can bring in technology, or I'll get you a soda from the teacher's lounge, like for my fourth grade daughter. She was like, Dad, I need a dollar because I get a soda from the teacher's lounge. I mean, she was so excited. So just think, but you have to be comfortable with those things, because when the students use them, you've got to honor it. And you can do all of that without making major tweaks to how you teach or using a spreadsheet or whatever.
Scott, I feel like you just offered a mini session on gamification, and I'd really like to challenge our sketchnoters out there. So, like, June Kim, Vanessa Perez, Wes Fryer, who else is really big into sketchnoting? I want to challenge you guys, you sketchnoters, to send us a sketch of this interview, because I want to see it. Like, you have given some amazing information, and so the three that I just called out, or if you are a sketchnoter, hit rewind, go back to the beginning, sketch this interview, because I want to see it.
Just I'm going to note down real quick the people you mentioned, so we tag them in the tweet.
Yes. So offer, like, I don't know, like, offer gamer points to those three for doing that. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out how to game it. And that's what I was trying to do also with the chat. And I think I used some vocabulary that was too much during chat.
Yes, yeah, so, like, the side quest one, I was like, oh
yeah,
I got stuck there.
Yeah, I think a lot of people
did.
I'm
not a gamer.
Right. Okay. But that's another thing that you can consider too as a teacher. It does require a little bit more thinking than just how you grade or perks that you can offer. But if we're doing this, the volcano unit, and we really want our students to learn about volcanoes, so that we've, as teachers, we're just taking what we've already done. We're taking our lesson that we've already done and sticking with volcano, and we've got to know about, you know, magma and molten lava and the Earth's core and plate tectonics. So we have to talk about all of those, and all of those are important pieces of learning about how a volcano becomes a volcano, right? And so what a side quest can be is, maybe I've sketched out, because I'm the teacher and I know the important things, I've sketched out, these are the lessons that we're going to have. But if I have a student that rolls through and they're like, I really want to learn more about this Kilauea volcano that's going on in Hawaii right now, because I don't understand why it's such a big deal, can I do some looking at that? Like, and so that becomes a side quest. Yes, please look into that volcano and tell us everything that you find out about it. Because in the process of digging into the Kilauea volcano, they're going to learn about volcanoes. They're going to learn some of the things I'm trying to teach them already.
Yeah.
And so, but it's just not, it's not the straight line that I had planned out. It's off that straight line. It's to the side of that line. But they're moving towards my end goal of understanding how volcanoes work. So I'm okay with that.
one of the most powerful, like, I went back and I watched the three YouTube, well, I'm still in the middle of the third one, YouTube videos you linked in to the show notes, and you've got them in the chat, but if you have the show notes in front of you, pull up those three videos and watch them. Jane McGonigal says in her little TED Talk that, like, the average gamer by the end of high school has played 10,000 hours of video games.
Right.
But the average high schooler at the end of high school has 10,080 hours of schooling. Like, the parallel life that these kids have to lead is insane. And if you can just mix those worlds, right, like, could you imagine how much more thoughtful we could be and playful we could be?
And
that was just a really powerful piece of information that she sent.
The thing is, especially with older students, and even... It gets younger and younger every year. Our students are exposed to these games from early ages, video games especially. You know, board games, card games, those are always been around, but they're a little bit different. But with video games, every video game that comes out, the video game has to teach the player how to play it.
Yes.
Every single
game. Yeah, thinking of Horizons right now. Right. That's what my husband's playing.
Or whatever. Just what if you go play a video game, there is a tutorial that you walk through as a player that teaches you how to play the game, and then they turn you loose. And so, why can't, like, almost all of our students by the time they get to high school are gamers of some fashion, and it's not just males and it's not just females. It's almost an even split. 98% of students play games on a regular basis, video games on a regular basis. They're right. Used to learning in that way. They're becoming more and more comfortable learning in that way. So why can't we make our classes fun and incorporate some of those ways that games teach players how to play the game? Why can't we do that in our classrooms?
I love it.
I don't think it's as hard as sometimes we try and make it.
Thank you for this little mini interview. I thought we were going to be able to squeeze it into the podcast, but I think we need a whole nother recording for the podcast.
Okay.
You just dropped a bunch of knowledge bombs, and I think people need to be able to go back and rewind and grab some of that information. So how about we go to the podcast?
That sounds like a good plan for me.
We're only saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, okay.